Thank you. Well, I'll tell you how I know there's movement in this place today. And I know for sure there's movement in this place today. Because I have never seen Isabel sit so close in my life to the front. Look at her there. So I was looking for Isabel. Is she here today? And there she is down the front. Inspired by Isabel. Let's take 2 minutes. Introduce yourself to someone. Shake someone's hand if you haven't shaken that for the last 2 or 3 or 4 weeks or whatever it is. Just get up off your seat and just introduce yourself to someone and say hello to someone who you haven't seen for a long time or before. All right, William.
Good morning.
Hey. Right, people, that'll do ya. That'll do ya. Take your seats. We're gonna start looking at Joseph here now. Last week, if you hear, Clive was taking us through Jacob and Esau, and basically he was talking about the consequences of our actions. That all of us, and of course in this world today, we don't want any consequences at all. But he took us through all the way through history, up to present time with regards to the descendant, the line of Esau. And that was in fact including the chapter 36. And now we're on chapter 37 here, with regards to turning back to Esau's brother Jacob, and particularly talking about Jacob's son Joseph. And how does this tie in to the purpose of the Bible and God's purposes and the pointing forward of Jesus? Well, Joseph, we're going to spend a number of weeks looking at, obviously Ronnie's speaking next week, and then 2 weeks after that we're going to come back to Joseph. It's a huge part of Genesis, with great significance, and it's right just to spend some weeks on it. But it's obviously a very well-known topic. If I said to you, what do you know about Joseph? You'd probably tell me about the Technicolor dream coat. And of course, the other obvious thing is we all know and have heard that he is his father's favorite, Joseph is Jacob's favorite son. And in fact, it's mentioned before this before chapter 37, like Catherine read out, whenever Jacob and Esau, the two brothers, whenever they'd fallen out, and whenever they were meeting again in chapter 33, Jacob was really scared about Esau taking retribution for the fact that Jacob had taken his birthright, and he was fearful of maybe Esau killing him and his family. And so whenever Esau and Jacob met, what Jacob did was he put his family into a pecking order in order to basically protect Joseph, who was right at the back with his mother Rachel, with Jacob's wife Rachel, and all the other children were in front of him. And then of course then you had the servants and you had the other people. And I don't know what you would have thought as a child, and you think you're all going to be in a huge, you're going to be slaughtered, or there's going to be terrible consequences, and yet you were told to stand in front of your brother or sister in some sort of pecking order. But that's what he did there in chapter 33. So we know straight away that Joseph, it was Jacob's favorite son. And of course, we read it here as well in verse 3. It said, now Israel, that's a new name that was given to Jacob by God in the previous chapters. And it says, now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. And it can be seriously argued, I was thinking here, that what happened to Joseph? His brother's hatred for Joseph, the brother's actions of wanting to even kill him, you could actually blame the father for this. Well, he's the one who's first stirred up this hatred towards him. The jealousy that they had towards him was because throughout these number of years they knew that his father favoured him. And was it Jacob's fault then? The favoritism of his father showed to one particular son led to the other brothers hating Joseph. And if Clive actually mentioned this last week with regards to the consequences of even having those favorites, particularly for parents whenever it comes to having children, and the family split that this can cause, and that we can see here. And even for, you would have thought Jacob would have learned his lesson, because his mother, Jacob's own mother, favored him, and it created a split between him and his brother, and yet he's doing exactly the same with Joseph here. And there is nothing good, I wrote down here, there's nothing good that can come from having favorites. Favoritism breeds jealousy, and jealousy destroys because it creates bitterness and sin. Jealousy destroys us, you see, because it destroys the very person who is jealous, because their whole motivation then is to actually destroy the person who they are envious about. And of course, while this favoritism was brought about by parents, I think it is actually a common theme, or something that all of us need to sit up and take note of, even within our own relations, whether it be within your own family or whether it actually be within this church. Jealousy, envy, it's like poison ripping relationships apart, where people suddenly cannot cope with the fact that maybe someone else seems to be doing better than they are. And I say seem because you have no idea what goes on behind closed doors. Social media is not the truth, people. And yet it creates so much jealousy and bitterness and envy. And then suddenly, before you know it, you're holding a grudge with someone, and you may not even know it, subconscious. And suddenly bitterness comes in and gossip comes in. And suddenly you don't want the best for that person. And it's ripping relationships apart. And we have to guard our hearts through this, and to make sure that we protect our relationships within the church and within our own families. So you might think, well, Joseph, he's really easy here. I'm trying to think. I don't even know what to put on my... there you go. Jealousy destroys. In fact, do you know what? I'm going to put them all up so that you can see what's coming. Jealousy destroys. And you might think, well, there you go. Hang on a minute, though. But Joseph was Jacob's favourite, so therefore life was made pretty easy for this guy. I mean, I'd love to be the favourite. Kerry thinks I am my mother's favourite. And I love it. I do get special treatment. She does put more on my plate than they do my sisters. So you think, well, life is really easy for Joseph here. But we have to remember that he actually had to deal with a lot. First of all, we've just read and we've learned that as a 17-year-old, he has to bear witness to the truth that he knows that his family hate him. He has to go around and each day and know that his brothers are leaving him out, that they're talking about him. And it's not really just an ignorance or just leaving him out. They actually despise him. And I don't know about you, but that would hurt anyone. That would hurt an adult. I know of adults today who are hurt because they feel left out of things. So imagine when you're a 17-year-old how it feels. Because when you're a teenager, being popular is the center of the universe. And he has to go about on a daily basis knowing that even his own family despise him. I mean, even the last dream there that he talked about, even his own father rebuked him on that one. He said, stop showing off. You're being proud here. So his only advocate that he had was even have a go at him. So he had a lot to deal with of having to acknowledge that. And can I just say and point out as well that he didn't have a mother to turn to. We haven't read it here, and we're not going to go back because we're trying to take large chunks with regards to Genesis. But his mother died as she gave birth to Joseph's younger brother, Benjamin. life doesn't seem so easy for this guy right now. I mean, if there was ever a case for a young person shutting themselves down or locking themselves away in the bedroom or not wanting anything to do with the world, certainly not seeing positive anything to do with it, you'd expect it and you'd understand it if it came from Joseph here. I'm hated by everyone. My mother died. I've got no one to turn to. So I don't want anything to do with the world. I think we would all understand if this was the attitude that he'd take. And I'm just going to point out some things from this chapter that stood out to me this week. And with that, bearing that in mind, his response to his father in verse 12, whenever his father came to him and said, Joseph, I'm looking for your brothers. I think they've gone and they're grazing the sheep. And he calls out for Joseph. He says in verse 13, and Israel said to Joseph, as you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them. Very well, he replied. In some versions it says, here I am. I read that again. I don't know why, it just stood out to me. I would have thought it would say, no way. I'm not going to them. They hate me. They've done nothing but pick on me since the day that I was born. They're jealous and they're envious. They've created so much problems in my life. There's no way that I am going and having anything to do with them. And there he was and he said, here I am. I'll go. I'll serve you this way, Father. He didn't do it begrudgingly. He actually went willingly with no complaining or excuses, even though I think he had so many excuses to give, he didn't give any at all. He just willingly went. He willingly served his father and he went to serve and go and find the very people who hated and despised him. Now, who does that sound like? In Romans 5 verses 8, it talks about while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That's where my mind went this week. Now, I don't know about you, but whenever I ask, say, Timothy, I'm picking on you again. Kerry, my wife, likes the fact my children are growing up because I'm using examples about the children, not necessarily slagging her off all the time from the front. But I have a hard time. Whenever I asked Timothy to clean his room, I'd say, Timothy, I want you to go and I want you to make your bed. Normally I have to say it two or three times. But on the third occasion, he will go up and he'll make his bed. I'll go up duly a little while afterwards and I'll say to him, right, let's see if you've done it. And I'll go into his bedroom and his bedroom's a complete mess. I say to him, why is your pajamas on the floor, your Legos out here, you've got things all over it. What's happened here? Technicality. You said make the bed. I've made the bed. I'm going to draw Kerry into it as well. I'm going to come up with an example here. I am completely abusing my position at the front right now in order to make points that I want to with my family. Cartons of milk or whatever it may be in the blue recycling bin. Kerry will go and make, and she knows they go in the blue bin. They will go as far as the back door. The blue bin is 2 metres the other side of the black back door. But Kerry thinks she's done her job by putting them at the back door. All she has to do is take 2 steps through the back door and they're in the blue bin. But to her, no, I've done the bare minimum. I've done what I have to do. They're at the back door. And what I'm trying to say is quite often in life, we can try and get away with doing the bare minimum, the least that is required from us. Maybe that's what it's like in work. And by the way, this spoke to me really heavily. Everything that I'm saying to you this morning, I have actually taken action on this week. It has actually made a few decisions for me this week that I have acted upon decisively in order to change. And we try to do the bare minimum, whether it be within our own family or whether it be within our workplace or whether it be serving the church, to say, do you know what, just try and duck and dive and try and do as little as possible. Well, I kind of help out with this ministry and I kind of do enough and really I've ticked that box and that's okay, I'm happy. with what I'm doing here. And then I was reading about Joseph, about everything that he's had to cope with, and I just couldn't help but admire him. And we start to see some of his character here, of which we're going to learn about in weeks to come. As he actually goes to find his brothers who hated him. Now remember that his father sent him to Shechem because that's where he was told that they were. Now, as far as I looked at the map of it this week, I should have put it up there. It's at least a 2-day journey from where Joseph was to go to Shechem. And whenever he got there, his brothers weren't there. And he met this guy here in verse 17, and the guy said, "They've moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them, let's go to Dothan." Now, with the examples I've been given there, and with our laziness and our want of basically doing the bare minimum, his father sent him to Shechem to find his brothers. How many of us then would say, "Right, I'm just going home and saying, hey, Dad, I went to Shechem, and they weren't there." Particularly on the fact that if Dothan was another day's journey, it was a minimum of 16 to 20 miles. This is a whole day. Now, with all the excuses that we know Joseph got with regards to his brothers hating him, with all the trauma that he's already gone through, with the fact he was detailed in order to go to Shechem, we would expect him maybe or understand him to go back, but he doesn't. They moved on. So Joseph, it says in verse 17, so Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. Talking about go the extra mile. Maybe it is just me, but this spoke to loads to me this week. This man would have made an awesome church member, I was thinking. He wouldn't have even had to have detailed jobs to him or tried to encourage him. He would have automatically, just willingly wanted to serve his father. You see, he didn't do the bare minimum. He gave everything he could in order to serve his father's wishes. His father said, go find your brothers. I will go and find my brothers. Whatever it takes, I'll go and do that. I'm not going to complain about it. I'm not going to whine about it. I'm not going to give excuses. I'm not going to do the bare minimum. I'm going to do what is necessary. Now, we have a calling upon our lives. And we learnt about it all when we went through Acts, that we are to be witnesses, serving God, telling people about Jesus, not just to our own families and to the local community, but also to the ends of the earth. Now, how are we getting on with that? How am I getting on with that when it comes to being willing and going the extra mile and doing what is necessary and putting it all out there, which we've just sung about, by the way? Or are we kind of like saying, listen, I'm going to give financially, I'm going to give with my time, but I'm going to do all of that so it doesn't really create too much disruption in my own life? Or are we going to serve like Joseph did and do everything that was necessary? He carried it out. And again, where my mind went, we have the greatest example of serving when it comes to Jesus. We see him in the Garden of Gethsemane there. I won't turn to it now. Whenever he's about to be called to go to the cross and to die the most brutal, painful death than anyone could. He's going to be shut off from his own father, and it is unbearable pain. And he says, not my will, but yours be done. Whatever it takes, God. Whatever it takes in order to serve you and bring these people who I love into a right relationship with God. There is no attitude of what can I get away with. We start to learn of the character of God, that the character that God was developing, in Joseph. And we start to see about the providence that he has about how he protected him, how he's orchestrating everything, that even though he was despised by his family, even though he was just sold by his brothers to the point where he won't even see his own father for 20 years. And we kind of think, what's going on here? We are then going to be looking at now and in the next couple of weeks about God's purposes for all of this. And there's two purposes that I want to talk about. the hope and pain, and I'm only briefly going to mention these because I do think these are going to come out, as I said, later on in the later chapters. But this is a story of hope for people who can't make sense about what's happening. Again, I sat there and I was trying to meditate about how would Joseph feel whenever he went and he approached the brothers, who he willingly went to fetch, and they grabbed him and they put him down at the bottom of a well. After roughing him up and beating him, and they threw him down the well, and he's there and he can't get out, and he hears them all laughing and joking, the fact that they all hate him, and he's sitting there. Imagine how he'd felt then. Imagine how he felt whenever he was watching his brothers doing the transaction of selling him, and then he was bound and caged and he was dragged away as a slave. What was going through his head? Do you think he understood what was happening here? And yet we're going to be learning about how God was delivering him to be in a position of being a ruler, to save the very people that put him there. And this is why we've got to be careful of churches and Christians who never mention pain and suffering, and there's plenty of them. It's not very cool or popular, and it doesn't really gather a good crowd when you're up the front. You can't talk about pain and suffering. That doesn't create a good feel, a buzz factor, does it? And yet it is all over the Bible, including Jesus himself, and people say, no, what can we do? Everything to get away from this. And in fact, God was using it in order for his purposes. And that's also whenever we're trying to work out decisions in life and God's plan for our lives, we need to be careful. Do we base this on simply what's comfortable and profitable? Well, God wouldn't want me to be without that, or God wouldn't want me that. Surely he wants me to be more comfortable. Surely he wants me to earn more, because after all, it's just all about ease. And therefore, that's going to be the focus of my decision-making. I need to be careful and draw this in and try and understand how God worked throughout the Bible. There's a great time of celebration here whenever we learn about what happened to Joseph, the great plan and the authority that he had and the position that God put him in. And the second one, sorry, I've just put it up there with regards to fulfilling the covenant. Again, I'm just going to mention this, okay? But I think it was Robert that took us through the chapter 15, took us through the covenant, the Lord's covenant with Abraham. And so I just want to bear mention to it, because this is what God said to Abraham. Then the Lord said to him, know for certain that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country. We talk about Egypt here. Where's Joseph on his way to? Egypt. Know for certain that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and that they will be enslaved and ill-treated there, but I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterwards they will come out with great possessions. And I just wanted to mention that this actually is the beginning of the fulfillment of the covenant that God had already given Abraham. We're going to start to see the outworkings of what God had already said. And as I said, to concentrate on chapter 37 here of Genesis, Joseph's brother, they plan to kill and get rid of him. They plan to kill the very person who's later was able to save them. So I want to make some closing statements here with regards to relating all of this to see how it points forward. And these are some of my thoughts, as I said. Jealousy, which is what we started with, led Joseph's brothers to wanting to kill him and to get rid of it. The religious leaders wanted to get rid of Jesus and kill him because they were jealous of him, of Jesus' growing popularity and the fact that he was growing a crowd and that people were listening to him. And they're saying, listen, we've got to get rid of this guy. I don't like the fact that he's taking people away from us and people are starting to follow him. We need to get rid of him. Jealousy was the cause here. By getting rid and selling a Joseph, remember Joseph, he had these dreams and he annoyed his brothers at the fact that he was saying that they were going to bow down to him. And they thought, well, do you know what? By getting rid of Joseph, by selling him off, we're going to end all of this stupidity of Joseph's dream. We're going to end it all. when in fact what they were doing was playing their part in fulfilling it. They were actually being used by God in order to put Joseph in the right position to fulfill God's covenant and his plan. And they thought they were ending it all. The religious leaders thought by standing there in front of Pontius Pilate and demanding that Jesus be crucified, that they were going to end his ministry. And it would all be over. As soon as he dies, all his followers dispersed, and that's going to be the end of it. When actually they were fulfilling God's plan. Ephesians 1 verse 7 says, in him, that's Jesus, we have redemption through his blood. The fact that he was on the cross, the very fact that a soldier went and pierced the side of Jesus and there was a pouring of blood was what was needed in order for us to be made right with God. That he paid the price. And they were standing there shouting at the top of the voice to crucify him, and they were being used by God to fulfill the very thing that was going to save us. It says, in him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins in accordance with the riches of God's grace. See, the gospel is just completely opposite to what the world expects. And that's why so many people can't get it. That's why we prayed for the Holy Spirit to be here this morning in order for ourselves to get it, for ourselves to understand it. I mean, how can God cause so much pain and so much suffering in order to bring about something that's good? And I want to finish with this. Because there's another group of people that didn't get it. And they're in Matthew 27. Matthew 27, verses 35. Again, we're looking at Jesus dying on the cross here. And this is what happened while Jesus was hanging on the cross. Matthew 27, verses 35. When they had crucified him, they divided up his clothes by casting lots. And sitting down, they kept watch over him there. Above his head, they placed the written charge against him. They were mocking him. They said, "This is Jesus, King of the Jews." Two rebels were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. Come down from the cross if you are the Son of God." In the same way, the chief priests, the teachers of the law and the elders mocked him. The very people who understood the scriptures, the very people who would have known that there needed to be a blood sacrifice, the very people who would have memorized the scriptures of saying that there was going to be a coming Savior and he must bear the iniquities of us all. This is what they said. This is what we're reading here. Verses 42, he saved himself, but he cannot. Yeah, they said in verse 41, in the same way the chief priests, the teachers of the law and the elders, they mocked him. He saved others, they said, but he can't save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross and then we will believe in him. They didn't understand the consequences of sin. They were hurling abuse of him and mocking him when actually God had orchestrated and it was his perfect plan. But their eyes and their hearts hadn't been revealed. In Hebrews 9 verses 22, they wouldn't have understood these verses. In fact, the law requires that nearly everything be cleansed with blood. And without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. So where are you in all of this? Joseph would not have understood what was happening to him. His brothers didn't have a clue that they were actually playing their part in God's plan of reversing the effects of sin. The religious leaders didn't have a clue that they were playing their part in actually offering a sacrifice, and the shedding of the blood was going to give us, was going to pay for our sins, and the only thing that would pay for our sins and give us access in order for God. They had no idea, and they were mocking him. So I'm asking you this morning, are you worshipping Jesus? Are you standing there thanking him for hanging on that cross and for the pouring out of his blood? Or are you mocking him? Because you're one or the other. Are you saying, "I don't really get the fact why he was on the cross, And you're standing there and you're saying, it doesn't make any sense why he would do these things. And you're standing with the mockers when in fact Jesus was serving you on that cross. He was pouring out his blood for you to have access to God. And the prayers that were going on this morning is that your eyes and your heart will understand who Jesus is and why he was doing this. It was for you. So this week, as we think about serving him and thanking him, as Jesus gave his life and gave everything and said, God, may your will be done and not mine, what are we holding back on? What are we giving the bare minimum of? Because Jesus gave it all. And I pray this week that we will give it all. And the week after that, and we will be his witnesses here and to the ends of the earth. Brian, you pray.